You're listening to the Paul Cardall Podcast. Please show your support by subscribing along with leaving a review.
Talking to my friend Richard Jackson today. Some of the more notable films and TV shows Richard worked in as a young actor: Casper, Bring It On, and as a supporting actor in Madison, starring Jim Caviezel. That was a great film. He is remembered on TV as the aggressive young, attractive man who Ally McBeal, in the premiere of her second season, had a hard time saying no to. From Baywatch, Boy Meets World, Star Trek, The Good Life, to his role on Saved by the Bell, The New Class, Richard knows the film and TV business, having grown up in it. So after his childhood rise to Hollywood stardom, he pursued a career in music with his brother Jonathan Jackson. Their band is called E Nation. He's known as a cap around his film company, FIFO, and he lives and breathes and eats advertising and strategic marketing. He's a wizard in the brains behind his entire operation. He's rooted in Spring Hill with his saint of a wife, Raquel. He has four little blessings, three girls and one boy. You're going to enjoy this conversation with my friend Richard.
You're listening to the Paul Cardall Podcast.
How you doing?
How are you? Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been interesting to read all the things you've done. And I think, and I have to say, the thing that stands out the most to me, and I don't know why, but this is hilarious, is the second season of Ally McBeal. Now, Ally McBeal was a long time ago, but you were the one, like, your character was the one man. She could not, you were like so much younger than this woman.
I was.
And
I was.
Her character could not resist and say no to you.
I feel you and I have some kind of strange connection. The reason I came in here was to ask you out. You know, as I said, I feel this kind of... I'm sorry. If your answer is no...
It's yes.
It is?
Yeah, I know. I was 18 and... I was the very young love interest for Ally McBeal, and it was a great show. She was really just a sweet person and a great actress, and the whole show was great. You know, working with David Kelly was amazing.
How did you get into all that as a kid? Was this something your parents were aware of and they pushed you into?
No, we had a very kind of normal childhood. We weren't entertainment focused at all. I was, you know, we were a little league family playing baseball and doing lots of sports and, you know, all the normal things that kids do. And then I think it was the summer of 1990, I think maybe 91, we had a family vacation where we all went to Universal Studios in Los Angeles. And it was there for the first time I saw how movies were made. And it was during the Back to the Future exhibit where they had the DeLorean and they had the clock tower and they were showing you how this whole sequence was made. And they called me up to be Marty McFly, to sit in the DeLorean. And so I was 11 or 12 and it just kind of, I just got the bug, you know, got bit, like how movies are made and acting and storytelling and all of that. And I went back from that experience to the Northwest and actually picked up a phone book, because at the time they still had phone books. And I looked up local talent agencies in Portland and I called them myself. And I said, I said, I'd like to come in and have a meeting about becoming an actor. And they said, how old are you? And I was like, I'm 12 years old. And they're like, your parents know about this? So I told my folks and they took the meeting and I started, you know, both Jonathan and I started acting locally in Portland. And then about a year later, we both moved down to Los Angeles after an acting competition called IMTA. I got a manager and started auditioning. And that's kind of how it all unfolded.
And I read that, was it your mom or your dad that was a ventriloquist?
My mom, yeah.
Was that just a thing she did? Was she hired and this was a job?
Yeah, she did that on the side. Like, it wasn't a professional thing, but she would go around to schools and do ventriloquism to teach kids about dental hygiene. And then she would like intro my dad. My dad was also a country music singer, so she would like intro some of his shows with a ventriloquism act. And it was funny. It's funny looking back, you know? And as we grew up, we became kind of involved with some of my dad's local country shows. And so I was doing stand up at like 12 years old, trying to get the audience laughing. And my mom was doing ventriloquism. And my dad was singing country music. And Jonathan was coming out singing Garth Brooks. Then Candace was coming out singing. It was just kind of like this whole family thing.
So there's the three of you. You got, and you're the oldest.
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually the middle.
Oh, you are?
Candace, my sister. Yeah, I'm older than Jonathan, but our sister's a little bit older than I am.
Yeah, what is she doing?
She's an attorney. She was way too smart to be in entertainment like Jonathan and I.
It's funny, you guys go from entertainment, your dad becomes goes to medical school, you know, and you guys start out in,
I know,
all these Hollywood things, and you got at the phone book and you aggressively called, and then all of a sudden you get into all this stuff. But what was the first like gig that you landed? Was it like a commercial? Was it okay?
I mean, the very, very first thing I landed was in Portland, Oregon, and it was a modeling shoot. So I was a kid on rollerblades and a skateboard doing a photo shoot, as well as a commercial for a company called G.I. Joe's. I think that was not the G.I. Joe's that we know of on TV. It was like a local department store, you know, kind of like a Kmart type of thing. So that was my very first thing. And I remember walking into the store months later and seeing, you know, one of the ads, like, you know, going to Target, you see these kids on the wall. I was one of those kids, and that was the first thing I did. And it was just kind of surreal. My first gig in LA was, hold on to your hat. It was Power Rangers. It was the very first thing I did. So I was a cousin to the Red Ranger. That was my first acting gig in Los Angeles.
And your friends probably thought you were the coolest thing on the planet because you're part of Power Rangers, which is kind of generation.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, even still years and years later, when I tell people about Power Rangers or Saved by the Bell, I mean, you never know what people are going to be like, what, you were on that, you know, and they get kind of excited about it, which is pretty funny.
I find it just so fascinating, the whole process of getting into films, because there's really no, like music, there's really no education that basically says, okay, we're going to go to school right now and you're going to prepare yourself to get into these industries. And it seems like entertainment, you have to aggressively, like, you have to get the phone book out and you have to call and you have to, because nobody really, at least I find, and tell me what you think in your journey, no one's really there to kind of help you until you aggressively ask and get involved. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I heard Alec Baldwin say once that there's nothing called the movie business looking for you. Like, there's no one that's going to be knocking on your door saying, we want to help. So it really is up to each artist to be focused and taking the steps that they need. And yeah, I mean, for me, my life has been fairly eclectic up to this point. You know, I started out as an actor. And then Jonathan and I, my brother Jonathan and I, we've done music for several years, you know, got signed to a label and did music for over a decade. I've directed, you know, short films and commercials and music videos and written screenplays. And so for me, I've thought about that. I've thought about my life being somewhat eclectic to this point. And it just feels like the common theme is really story. You know, as an actor, you're playing out a part of someone's story. As a writer, obviously, you're developing a story. Even in music and certainly in marketing and filmmaking, all of those aspects, it's all about telling stories. They're just in different formats. And so for me, that's kind of the common thread that keeps me sane, is like, wherever I am, I feel like God's using me to tell stories. And that kind of just is the thing that I'm most passionate about, is finding those stories that impact people, whether they're bite-sized or, you know, bigger and better, longer stories.
The stories are the things that transform us. And, you know, the Bible's been around about 1,000 years. I would say 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. And yet people don't stop reading it. They continue to be fascinated by it because, you know, I always go into these Christian tangents, but Jesus told stories. He never really told a story about his neighbors or something that happened yesterday. Oh, you know, yesterday I was whatever. But he told these profound stories that changed lives. And so I'm totally with you. Now, when I moved to Nashville, listener, there's a lot of music in Nashville. And I went to a place called Basement because I wanted to see this band, E Nation. I did not know you and Jonathan. And who's the other gentleman that's in the band?
Jonathan Thatcher.
I didn't know. So anyways, I go and I got like a photo of you playing drums. And
I know that was so... We were like, we know each other. How do we know each other? Oh, goodness.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Bandsy Nation. It's an alternative rock band. I mean, some of the bands that we love and are inspired by are, I would say Radiohead is one. U2 is another band that we've always loved their music. I love alternative and European influenced rock stuff. I mean, a highlight for me was probably touring with a band called Echo and the Bunnymen. Bono has even said that the lead singer, Ian McCulloch, is better than him, which is incredibly gracious, but also tells you the kind of esteem that they have in, you know, some of the circles. But, you know, yeah, it was amazing. We just got to play incredible venues. The tour ended in London with a sold out show at the Royal Albert Hall, which was literally like a dream come true. You know, I remember being on stage performing and, you know, you're kind of focused on just what you're doing. But in a moment, I kind of looked up and I just saw the circular amphitheater and it's kind of hallowed ground in a way for musicians because they've hosted anyone you can think of at Royal Albert. And it was literally like, okay, this has been like a dream of mine to be on a stage of this caliber in a venue that has this much music history. And I had about 2 seconds of really taking that in. It was amazing. And then I was like, don't drop the drumsticks. That was the next thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you twirling the drumsticks? Are you doing that often in the show? Are you twirling? You don't throw it up in the sky?
No. Yeah.
You know, the dream scenario, you know, you're in Royal Albert Hall, everyone from the Stones to the Killers. I mean, yeah, you're right. Everyone's played there. You know, that is the dream. You get to play this amazing venue that you've imagined since you first start the band. And then it's like you say, it's 2 seconds of realization and then it's all nostalgia.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. You get a moment to really enjoy it and soak it in. But at the same time, you're there to, you know, do your job, so to speak, which is to be totally engrossed in the music and hopefully have the songs impacting people that are hearing it. So there wasn't a ton of time to, there was a little bit after the show, just kind of taking a step back. And, you know, I kept the song list, you know, so I could have a memento. But that's, I don't know, that's one of the things about life and about time that's really interesting. You know, my dad said once that time is like putting your hands in a running river of water, like it'll keep passing you by, that you can't stop it. And so I think with all of those things in life, I just kind of try and grab the value of it and hold on to it and then let it go and be like, that was a really amazing moment and thank God for it. And then say, what's next? What's next, Lord?
Yeah, it really becomes a roller coaster of, you know, when you're prayerful and your life is filled with purpose and meaning, it's like you wake up and you're like, what's going to happen today? You kind of have an idea, a vision.
Yeah.
But you wake up and you're like, anything could happen today.
Exactly. Even right now, my day-to-day is running a marketing and advertising agency here in Nashville. And so that's really great for, you know, music videos and commercials and that side of storytelling. But at the same time, I'm still on my off time. I'm writing scripts with my brother. I'm developing films, you know, looking towards the future on what that might look like for diving in more in the filmmaking side, which has been a long time passion of mine. And so it is, it's an adventure, you know, waking up every day just thinking, you have a vision for your life, but I've noticed that every 5 years seems like my life looks very different, you know? So it's hard for me to imagine what my life might look like in 5 years or 10 years. I have a vision around it, but God seems to have a way of upending our plans and doing things and changing things. So the older I get, the more I'm learning how to let go and just be like, okay, it's an adventure and there'll be ups and downs, but stay focused on the things that really matter.
Yeah, you mentioned listening to God in some aspect. So when did you always have that relationship with God? Did you have God in your life when you were a kid?
Huh? I did, but it definitely matured. There were transitional moments. I had the kind of relationship with the Lord when I was little, where if I lost, let's say I was playing catch with a baseball outside and it flew away and went in the backyards when we had a bunch of trees and I just couldn't find it. My brother and I would stop and go, let's pray about it. Let's pray that we could find this baseball. And we'd pray about it, and man, 9 times out of 10, we'd see it. And we would just show up, and it just instilled this childlike faith of like, when you pray, God hears you. So I had that faith growing up, but I didn't really have a relationship in the same sense that I have now. As I got older into my early 20s, I kind of started to understand more about what is that hearing the voice of the Lord in your life. Like, I love that Jesus says that the sheep will know my voice. I just love that, because that tells me that there's a relationship and a communication that can happen. Yeah. Through prayer and through the Holy Spirit and all of that. And so for me, that part of my relationship with God, of listening and hearing and being impressed with what he wants to say or do in my life, that's grown over time. That's been the thing that I think has matured more than anything.
Do you think having that in your life is what's guided you to have the family that you have today?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. So I met Raquel, my wife, in Los Angeles. We were, my brother and I were doing an acoustic concert. It was like a General Hospital fan event. Jonathan was on General Hospital for a while. And she and a friend ended up sitting next to my mom. Mm. And my mom invited them to our Bible study, our home Bible study that we have in Los Angeles. And we just became friends. I thought she was nice and I thought she was wonderful, but there were no like immediate sparks. It took probably 3 or 4 years of being friends and being in a circle of friends until the one summer the spark hit and it was like, why haven't I seen her in this light before? And I think that relationship with Raquel and then having our kids was certainly something that was from the Lord. And I mean, even having kids was a miracle. Raquel yeah. had something called endometriosis, and the doctors told her she was not going to have kids. And she told me that when we were getting married, like, I need you to know, like, there's a chance we might not have kids. And I remember thinking, I just knew that, at least I felt in my heart, that God was going to make me a father. And if I was going to be a father, then she was going to be a mother, and God would make a way. And he did. And we have 4 kids. And it's crazy busy, but it's awesome. We love it.
They're beautiful. 3 girls, 1 boy.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the
range? Thanks. Yeah.
What's the range of age?
So I have twin girls. We started with a bang. We started with twins.
Yeah. There you go, medicine. God's taken over.
13, 13, 10, and 6. My son is almost 6 years old.
6. Great. I have 2 daughters. Yeah. And having daughters is really like, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Oh, it is.
Those ages are so precious.
Yeah, I know. Remind me, how old are your kids?
My kids are 17 and 10. So they're two, you know, pretty far apart. And the thing with kids, you can't predict their personality. You cannot, like, they come.
No.
They come to challenge and wrestle you.
They do. Yeah. And I've noticed it with twins. Twins is fascinating because you're literally parenting the exact same style, the exact same timing and everything. And yet you have 2 very different people, very different from the get-go. And I know that there's a lot that comes with, you know, parenting and intentionality and all of that. But there's also a lot that comes with just how they're made and their makeup and how they see things. Like, that's, I've seen that with my twins. Like, it really is from the beginning, they were very different. You know, their names are Evelyn and Hannah, my twins. And so Hannah's very organized and very, in just an example would be like, she would set up the blocks in color coordinated ways and stack them a certain way and have it very beautiful and organized. And Evelyn would just knock things over. That was her way of doing things. And that just kind of tells you the different kind of personalities, you know? So both amazing and both beautiful, but very different. And it's fun to see. It's fun to see that as a parent. Like there's so much we can do as parents, but then you have to, at some point you're like, this is who you are. And it's just beautiful.
When you grew up, did you guys all get along or did you have your skirmishes? And
No. It's funny. Jonathan and I we're really close now, but growing up, we fought a lot.
Really?
I mean, we had epic fights. Yeah. We had like moments where he gave me stitches by hitting me over the head with a hockey stick.
Whoa.
There were moments where I was, you know, throwing ping pong paddles at him and yelling. And I mean, we were very competitive around sports, primarily around sports, but around a lot of things. And it wasn't until we were a little bit, I mean, he was probably 10 and I was 13, and my parents sat us down and they were like, you guys need to pretend to like each other. Just pretend. We don't even care if you do. Just pretend to like each other.
Oh, we'll all go down to meet her when she comes.
Oh, I'll go right out to meet her with a posy. I will greet her, and she'll think that I'm the sweetest. What's the matter, don't you?
No. Oh!
All right, fine. And so we did. We started pretending. And then they said, and why don't you try and find something that you can do together? And that was the first time we'd really thought about pulling out a camera and making little home movies and doing those types of things. And all of a sudden something clicked. And we're like, hey, this is actually kind of fun. Like we can, if I'm holding the camera and you're on camera and vice versa, and we can come up with stories together. And that kind of just switched, changed all the whole dynamic in our friendship. And we stopped fighting and started writing and making films and doing all that stuff. Having a brother in that environment growing up in Los Angeles, kind of knowing that we had each other's backs, that we were able to talk through whatever we were going through, that's definitely carried through into our adult life to be able to continue to have that friendship.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm thinking of your parents. Your parents were the ones that set off the acting careers when they said, we want you to pretend to like each other. You guys become such Emmy-winning pretenders. You might want to tell Jonathan someday that you've been pretending the whole time and you hate his guts.
Oh, man. That's pretty good. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I've seen you guys together, and there's a great chemistry of brotherhood. And man, it's just a really special thing when you have brothers. Raquel, what's her background? I mean, because you, wherever you talk about her, you say my saint of a wife. And I think it's true for so many of us that the wife fears God. And when I say fear, I mean respects God to the point where it's, what's that line in Jesus Revolution? If you ever come between me and God, I'm choosing God.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, I love that Raquel is that kind of woman, you know, that she would say that. She would say it's Jesus first. It's God first in everything. And I would agree. I mean, her faith is beautiful because there are different seasons where we encourage and strengthen each other. But really in the last 5 years, I would say that her faith has really pushed mine just to continue to believe the more that God has and not the superficial more, but like the spiritual more, you know, the faith more, the relationship more. How can God impact our lives, and how can we impact others? And her faith has just been a beautiful, beautiful force of like moving and challenging me to not get complacent. I think I hit a place in my walk with the Lord, especially when it came to community, where I was kind of complacent, you know, just not wanting to invest as much in the church community side of things. And her faith really inspired me to take steps out into more of that. And I'm just seeing more and more the blessing that comes with doing that. Yeah, she is. She's a saint. She's amazing. She takes care of our four kids.
Yeah.
She works part-time, and she's just an amazing, amazing woman. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, women are superheroes. They can do things we can't even comprehend. We think we can, you know.
I know.
And when we do, Jeff Foxworthy says, you know, every time I take out the garbage to do my 1%, I let her know.
I am so guilty of that. I folded those three shirts, honey. She's like, great. I just did 1,900 loads of laundry. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. Let's talk about this idea of getting fellowship and getting community, because I think all of us have those moments where it's like, we just aren't interested, or we, I don't know, different emotions. I mean, for you, what are you seeing with, you know, not only yourself and other people? What is it about us not wanting to do that?
Yeah. Oh, I can speak for myself. I think it was, it's just relational bruising that happened. You know, when you have a intimacy with a church group or family of believers, you know, people are messy. We're all messy. And there's going to be hurt that comes and wounds that come. And at some point in my journey, I took a pause and I was like, I just don't know how much I want to invest in that side of things right now. And that was coming from just a place of, you know, pretty much licking my wounds, really. So it took some time for God to heal that process, but then also move into a community where you can find that place of trust again. And that it's, I don't know, it a good analogy, I think, is like a relationship where you're with someone and then you break up and there's that hurt, and then you have to get over that hurt in order to be vulnerable enough to trust again. I think it's a similar process for faith and fellowship and community. And I know that's the case for me in the church community. I know that's probably the case for people, just even if they're not sharing in the faith, just in relationships, because when you get hurt, you just want to kind of pull back, and it takes some time. But I have seen, as of recently, not only God healing those wounds, but bringing into a fresh season of fellowship that it's a blessing. And like you said, the way of the cross, it's both ways, and there's no way around it. Like, there's no such thing as a solo Christian. There just isn't. And I've been guilty of trying to walk that line at different seasons of my life, of being like, no, I just, you know, I'm good. I have a couple friends and I have Jesus, and, you know, like, I'm good. But that's just not what the way is. And so we're supposed to pick up our cross, and part of that is getting messy with people.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way around it.
Yeah, fellowship is being vulnerable, and who you trust is difficult, because you get burned in the past. But, you know, I spent a good time of my life in a men's group that would meet on a Sunday preceding the church service, and people were not engaged. You know, we were not as engaged. It was a corporate setting, and it was just, you know, you were there because you loved God and you loved the church. But since I've removed myself from that and been in some of these groups of men that get together, like I was in yesterday, Tuesday, at the coffee shop. If you live down there, you ought to come to this thing. It's pretty awesome. The lead singer of Unspoken, you did their music video. He leads it. So,
are you talking about the Tuesday morning group?
Yeah, Tuesday morning group. Do you ever go to that?
That's so funny you say that, Paul. I go there. I just missed this week.
Oh, it's 45 minutes for me to drive down there in the morning on Tuesdays. But I've been there a couple times, and
Funny, I haven't seen you. We must have just missed each other. I've had a shoot or something during the day, and that's so funny. I'm so glad that you're going there.
It's worth the drive, and then it gives me, you know, anytime you can start with scriptures and good fellowship, I mean, the rest of the day is just amazing. But I used to be in this group where it was like, in different groups, and I led a lot of these groups, but it was just kind of depressing. No one was prepared. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of guilt in, you know, why haven't we been out ministering? Why haven't we been out? But then I come to these things, and there's so much life and excitement for God, and excitement to be, you know, better people. We come with this weight on us. And by the end of these, you know, we've read the scriptures together, we've prayed together, Man, and everybody's vulnerable. You do this round table. It's yeah. so powerful. And I wish I could get that experience to so many of my colleagues in the past. But yeah, I'm with you. You know, I was not into it. My wife was like, listen, I like you so much more when you go to that stuff.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally. It's inspiring to sit in a room full of men and be able to share and be vulnerable and just learn from each other, you know, and be encouraged by each other. I'm encouraged just listening to what other people are going through and how they're handling things with their family or their work or their walk with the Lord. It's been a huge blessing to have that.
Yeah, it's a good group. But I want to shift and talk about your production company, FIFO. You know, we mentioned Unspoken, which is a very successful Christian band for those that aren't familiar with them. You just filmed one of their videos. Maybe it was a couple years ago or recent, but it's fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah. No, I mean, starting FIFO, it's myself and my business partner, Cole Gorman. He's our creative director. Shout out to him. He's amazing. So yeah, FIFO is an advertising and brand agency, and we do production as well. So we were able to partner with Unspoken on their last video, and we actually just shot it this year in January. And the video is called God Help Me.
God help me now. Feels like there's no way out.
Beautiful song, gorgeous ballad, just about Chad, the lead singer of Unspoken, has this beautiful story. 20 years ago, God basically rescued him from addiction. And he said that the night before he became a believer, he was praying out. He was calling out to God. He was like, God, help me with my addiction. Basically, like, if you're real, help me. And the next day, he said his whole life changed. Something changed in him. And he went on a missions trip, and he just has dedicated his life to the Lord. So this song is kind of taking that whole experience that happened 20 years ago and saying, we all have these moments where we're calling out to God, like just in desperation, God help me. And so the theme of the video, I was able to direct it, and it was a lot of fun. And the theme was Joseph. So it's kind of like this little homage to Joseph. He's wearing a coat of many colors, and he's in this really dark warehouse. And it's kind of like speaking to the prison that Joseph was in. And so the song is essentially, what would that prayer look like in Joseph's life, in Chad's life, and in our life? And it's just a beautiful song, and it was a lot of fun to put together. And FIFO does, you know, commercials, and we do music videos, and we do marketing stuff and branding. It's definitely something that keeps me on my toes, because there's always new stuff coming in and always fun projects that we're working on.
Do you enjoy this more than acting?
I enjoy filmmaking more than acting. Yeah. Like, I would much rather be behind the camera writing and directing and producing than in front. I mean, I'll tell people, like, if there's a friend that's doing a project and for some reason they want me to be an actor in it, like, I have no problem doing that, but it's not a passion of mine. I love storytelling, and I love filmmaking, and that's the stuff that gets me really excited.
Was it easy to do acting, or stressful, or?
I wouldn't say I was nervous about the performing part, but I always felt like, and maybe it was being so close to Jonathan, who is an incredible actor. Like, just if people are able to watch the body of work, he's literally amazing. And being that close to an amazing actor, I was always like, I'm not that good. I'm like, I'm a good actor, but that's next level, you know? When you see someone that's truly gifted, I just felt like I had to work really hard to be a good actor. And so I think that's part of it. Writing and directing and filmmaking feels a little bit more like breathing to me than acting did. So I think that's part of it. I mean, it's hard to put. I mean, that was my first passion. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be like Michael J. Fox from Back to the Future. That was my dream. But it quickly shifted to, like, acting's only part of the storytelling process, and I'm more excited about all the other parts of storytelling.
Were you ever frustrated that your brother had this gift that seemed to put him in lead roles? Because you're right. He is one. I think as far as Nashville, he was the best, the most believable character. So natural for him. And my friend Antonio Sabata Jr. worked with him on General Hospital, calls him his little boy.
Yeah. Said
it's just amazing the way he would show up and just flawlessly do the soap opera. Did you feel, because I know with my own brothers, there's always this, I don't want to say jealousy, but there's this envy of, wow, they're just so good at what they do. You know, I want to rub off on me more.
I think I would say that the hardest part for me in that scenario was feeling like I was always being compared to Jonathan growing up in the entertainment world. So a common conversation would be, you know, meeting someone in the industry, you know, so what have you been up to? And what have you been up to? And those things were always different. Like, Jonathan was like, oh, I just did this film with Al Pacino and worked with Christopher Nolan. And I was like, I just did Boy Meets World. You know, like it's like these
Power Ranger fans.
Yeah, and don't forget Boy the Power World. Rangers,
so
you know.
I think you're in your lane, dude. You are in your lane.
Right. So it was always, I think it was more on that side, like I had to learn, God had to teach me how not to compare myself to Jonathan. I didn't struggle very much with this one-on-one jealousy with Jonathan. Like, gosh, I wish I was more like him, or I wish, I mean, there might've been things like, I wish I could be doing some of the projects he's doing, but I never felt the intentional jealousy, so to speak, towards him, but it was more like a reflection on myself. And I remember reading, I think it's in the book of John, I was reading about the interaction that Jesus had with Peter. And Jesus was basically saying, Peter, you need to follow me. And what I do with John, what's it to you? And it was such a great moment of clarity. I'm like, that's what the Lord's saying to me. He's saying, what's it to you what I choose to do with John, with Jonathan, your brother?
Yeah.
And that sunk in. I was like, you know what? I just have to focus on who is the Lord to me and where does my value come from? And it actually, over time, taught me how not to care so much about what people think about me, because that was pervasive in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Constantly being, you know, judged by what you're doing or what status you have. And that was, it was a rooting out process. And I'm kind of grateful for it.
In Christianity, we talk about how God is writing our story, and your story is being written, and it's interwoven with family members and friends and stuff, but it's your story that he's telling.
Yeah.
And we go through these phases where, you know, we need to recognize our value independent of others. But, and maybe it's the fault of naming you guys simultaneously as the, what was it? The sexiest, you're in the list of sexiest men.
Oh, man. Like, you're not going there, are you, Paul?
That People magazine is this year of Paul Rudd, you know?
Oh, man. I was the,
get on there. Maybe Screech.
Yeah, I was definitely the hip pocket. I got ushered in there because they needed a set of brothers that they thought were relatively good looking. And so I was like, oh, sure. Yeah, I'll be the other brother. That's no problem. So yeah, I don't really take actual stock in being in People magazine's sexiest people. I just kind of I got dragged along into that one.
How does that work?
I have no idea.
Is there like a the same people that create International This Day and International That Day? They're like, okay, we're gonna
probably. Let me talk about the Jackson brothers after we get this international pancake situation figured out, you know? So I don't know. I don't know how it works. I know at the time we had a publicist, and I'm sure that the publicist probably was pitching things to magazines and like, keep in mind what the Jackson brothers are doing. You know, they're both on TV. You might want to feature brothers in your, you know, I don't know. They were probably doing something like that, but
I love it.
It's funny. Yeah. Those are so those shoots are so funny and so ridiculous. You know, they had us in a pool with our hair slicked back and like doing our best to look like we belong there. I don't know.
Do you have a copy of that? You got to send me a copy of that. I got to post that on the YouTube.
Oh, I don't have one readily available.
Oh, I'll find it.
Raquel look. Might have it somewhere, but.
Oh, she's.
I mean, the funny thing is,
she's got it hanging up in her closet with Jonathan cut out.
No, she thinks it's a bigger deal that I'm on your podcast. I've been telling her, yeah, I'm on Paul's podcast. She's like, that's so cool. You get to be on a podcast this week. I'm like, yep, so cool.
Oh, no, man. It's awesome. I have really enjoyed getting to know you and look forward to, you know, more adventures and Bible study on Tuesday mornings. That's so weird.
Absolutely.
Man. Like, that is such, and I didn't mean to promote that. Anyone's welcome. If you live in Nashville, come check that out. But I'm excited about your future and your career and mostly your family, your kids, man. You've invested in human beings that will love you and give your life so much meaning. Yeah.
Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for the conversation. You're amazing and honored to be witness to what you're doing too.
Well, I appreciate you. We'll put in the notes a link to FIFO if there's anybody out there that needs some production work. Thanks, man.
Thanks, bro. Take care.
See you later.
Yeah. Bye.
Please show your support by leaving a review of the Paul Cardall Podcast wherever you listen. For more information, visit www.paulcardall.com.